This is a special presentation of Gen Con 2010, brought to you by the Gamers Haven Podcast at gamershavenpodcast.com and the Vorpal Network at vorpalnetwork.com.
These are...
It's game time.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Is the next step the transplantation of the human brain?
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
Stand by for action.
Welcome to the party, pal!
Okay. Remember, we're not dealing with an intelligence on our own level.
Bring in the logic probe!
Ooh! End of line.
Noble Knight Games has been serving the needs of thousands of gamers worldwide since 1997. Huge selection of over 30,000 unique products, including discounts on most in-print games of up to 50% off or more. Noble Knight Games is the place for out-of-print RPGs, board games, war games, collectible card games, miniatures, and all things game-related. They ship worldwide and will purchase or trade your titles you no longer need, new, or used. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. Just visit www.noblenight.com. Or visit our website for direct access to thousands of new, out-of-print, and in some cases, one-of-a-kind items.
This is the Vorpal Network.
This is Celine with the Gamers Haven, and I'm here with...
Tavis Parker.
Hello, Ms. Parker. Okay, so how can I help, or what can you tell me about your company?
Well, the Game Crafter has been around for about a year now. We were at Gen Con last year introducing the service, but if you haven't heard about it, it is a print-on-demand game publisher. So what that means is you can upload your artwork to a website. You can then have us print cards and game boards of various sizes. You can add a variety of parts to that as well, and also rule sheets. And then we can print them on demand, so we can print as few as one copy or 1,000 copies.
So we'd be able to actually do like a custom card game or anything for your
Absolutely, you can. You have full control over the templates for the cards. It's kind of like a clean slate, and then you can import your artwork into those templates and then upload them.
So how does it like protect the copyrights for any kind of custom items? Like, would you be able to do like a deck of many things, or is that copyrighted by someone else you're not allowed to?
You can't print copyrighted materials. It's just like with any printing service.
Yeah.
But the question comes up is, how is it protected if they publish their own material? The Game Crafter is just a printer, so if a game designer has original content, they maintain full rights to that. So we don't ever take ownership of the product.
Okay, so you make sure no one tries to sell copyrighted items through you, but
Correct.
You protect the copyrighted
printer. Correct, yep.
So what's some of the examples of the games we have out here then?
Well, we have several games. We have a game called Ninjistics, which is a party game, which involves basically randomness by rolling the dice, and you land on certain different levels of these ninja dens. And so, depending on where you land, you could be guessing the color of your friend's underwear, or you could be flipping coins into glasses. You may have to put a quarter on your elbow and try to catch it.
All life skills then.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's all stupid human tricks. And it's very fun because depending on which ninja you are, you get special abilities, which can help save you. And really the goal is to get to the top and to finish the game.
Is there any way you get knocked back, or do you only go ahead?
You can get knocked back if you fail the trick at a given level. There's four tricks or four different places where you can do a trick. And if you fail them, you drop down to the level below you.
Oh.
Now, if you succeed, then you move up a level. And so depending on how many people are playing, the boards, as you can see, are additional levels. So if there's fewer people playing, you have to go up higher. And these are basically arranged so that the hardest tricks are always at the first spot, and then they get gradually easier.
Okay. Yeah, because whistling, I don't know who's going to manage that one.
Yeah, and some of them, it's special ways of doing things. There's one game.
Is there any bigger one that's a bigger seller right now?
The biggest ones are actually, we didn't bring the biggest ones just because we showcase a variety of games.
Okay.
But we have, there's a whole bunch of different games out on the site. The most popular games actually come up right on thegamecrafter.com.
Okay.
And so there's, as well as the 50 newest games that are submitted by the community.
So anyone looking for them would just go to gamecrafter.com? And
correct. Yep.
Okay. Alright, so is there anything else you'd like to add?
Right now, Gen Con, we have a 5% discount if you go out to thegamecrafter.com/GenCon.
Okay. Well, thank you for your time, Mr.
Thank you.
This is Ethan with the Gamers Haven Podcast. I'm here with, say your name, sir.
Derek Stolting.
With Eden Studios, makers of the Buffy the Vampire Slayer game, Angel, various other things. What do you guys have new at Gen Con this year?
Absolutely nothing.
Absolutely nothing. What is it you're pitching this year?
This year, we're just here showing that, you know, we're still around. We had a lot of people that thought we were, quote-unquote, out of business. We've never folded. We've never gone out of business. The newest thing for us that we're really talking about is the hack/card game and RPG. The hack/card game will be out November, December. We've actually got prototypes here that people can look at. So it's not vaporware. It's not something that we're not going to do. We've got screenshots of everything on the cards. The rules are written, ready to go. We're doing demo games. And then we're going to follow it up next year with an RPG, and it'll be compatible with all of our other products.
And that's you guys have a system that you generally use, and the name of it escapes me right now. I'm sorry.
The name of the system is the Unis system.
Thank you.
The big sellers for us right now are really All Flesh Must Be Eaten. It's our longest running Unis system game that's sold the most. Obviously, Armageddon and Witchcraft were out before that. But the hack/card game will be compatible if you're a fan of Buffy or Angel or Army of Darkness, but it'll also work with everybody else.
All right, cool. Thank you very much.
And this is Celine with the Gamers Haven Podcast.
And Kenneth Height with Pelgrane Press today.
All right. And what do you do over at...
I'm a writer. I wrote Trail of Cthulhu. I wrote Rough Magics and a number of other products for Pelgrane and for other publishers. I'm a freelancer.
Are these expansions then for other systems kind of thing? Or just...
Trail of Cthulhu is a licensed adaptation of Call of Cthulhu to the Gumshoe system.
Oh, okay.
And so it is a standalone game in the Gumshoe system, the Gumshoe engine designed by Robin Laws, facilitating investigative role-playing of all kinds.
So it's an adaptation of Call of Cthulhu license into another system.
Right, exactly. Okay.
And it's just an investigation bend more than a horror bend for it?
In Lovecraft, as in most of the mythos, you investigate a mystery and it reveals the horror.
Okay.
So it's both, but this makes the investigation part of it more better tuned and more streamlined.
Okay. So it takes it, but it's just a different aspect, but the same feel.
Right, yes. Although the Trail of Cthulhu is set in the 30s instead of the 20s, so the background feel is also grimier and more disgusting.
Like film noir type thing.
Something of a noir, but the 30s are the decade of the Dust Bowl, the Depression, Hitler, Stalin, the Nanking Raid. Everything that is terrible happens in the 30s. The 20s is all Jazz Age and Flappers and F. Scott Fitzgerald, which is all nice.
And then they also, of course, on top of that horror that's there, they get the Cthulhu.
They get the Cthulhu mythos, precisely.
Is there anything you're working on right now that you're allowed to divulge?
I am finishing up Bookhounds of London, which is a source book for Trail of Cthulhu, in which you play the people in London who have bookshops slowly going bankrupt, who survive by selling mythos grimoires to sweaty Satanists. And they have to hope that the sweaty Satanist they sold it to is incompetent. Because if he's not, then they have to steal it back. And then I'm designing Knights Black Agents, which is a new game for the Gumshoe Engine, which is the vampire spy thriller game.
Okay.
So,
are you playing vampires?
No, you are playing freelance secret agents, like in Ronin or the Bourne Identity.
Okay.
Who discover all of a sudden that you've been working for vampires.
Oh.
So you have to hunt and kill the vampires because they are definitely hunting and killing you.
You gotta hunt your own bosses down.
Exactly.
Well, there's quite a few people who want to get into that. Just really.
I would imagine so, yes.
All right. I think that's probably it that I'm seeing here. Do you do the Trail of Cthulhu primarily, or is that... Is there anything else that you work on?
I'm a freelancer. I do a lot of products for a lot of other game lines.
Okay.
My setting, Day After Ragnarok, I did for the Savage Worlds engine and for Hero.
And I've heard of Day After Ragnarok.
Right. It's up for an Annie Award tonight.
Oh,
so
good luck.
We'll cross
be down
fingers.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much for your help.
Hey, thanks very much.
Nice to have minions. I've discovered that. Well, this is Ethan with the Gamers Haven podcast. I am here with Mr.
Eric Bauer from Gaming Paper.
Excellent. And I like to say that your name is spelled correctly. I have a brother named Eric, and that is the proper Viking spelling. So
it's correct. Yep. You can't trust an Eric with a C.
Yeah. Well, even worse ones with CK. They're just posers, really.
That's right.
But we're here with Gaming Paper. Any at this point, any nominated. We're hoping for an any award-winning Gaming Paper. Well, why don't you tell us about it? What is, for the benefit of our listeners at home, what is Gaming Paper?
Gaming Paper is an enormous clay-coated paper surface, a roll that you can roll out. You can draw your maps up beforehand on it, and then roll it out at the game. You can draw maps that you're planning on keeping, or your players are going to come back to. It's 30 inches wide by 12 feet long, so you get 30 square feet of play area, and it runs only $4.
Excellent. And I notice you guys now have singles out as well.
Yep, the singles are 8.5 by 11. Think of them as printer paper, but they're pre-printed with full bleed, 1-inch squares.
Cool. Are they? Are you able to put it through an inkjet printer at all?
Absolutely, yep. You can put it through any kind of printer you'd like. You can print them up that way, or we've had a lot of people who were asking, you know, for something smaller to be able to cut out and use like almost like dungeon tiles.
Right.
And that lends itself quite well to that.
Print on wood, draw onto it, laminate it, whatever.
Sure, yep, absolutely.
The laminators are pretty cheap nowadays. You can get single sheet feeds for like $25 at Walmart, I think.
They're very inexpensive. So that's
a perfect size, yeah.
Yep, and it's full bleed, so the lines go all the way to the edge, and it's double-sided.
It's double-sided?
Yep.
Very nice. Very nice. Indeed.
And it's 100% recycled, post-consumer recycled,
really?
So it's druid-friendly.
Druid-friendly.
Ranger-approved.
Nice.
Yep.
Ranger-approved. That's great. That's great. And I think the other option I looked at it was, you know, this is just the gaming paper, either hex or the squares. It's great for wrapping paper for those gifts for your geeks.
That's right. We've had actually Sean K. Reynolds from Paizo send in a picture of him. He had wrapped one of his friend's gifts in it.
Nice.
In fact, I've killed one of my fellow gamers and then presented him with a gift where he died on it. So that was wrapped in where he died.
And you guys have a huge presence on YouTube, I know. Tons of videos about the durability of gaming paper and your tests that you've done.
Yeah, we've tried all different kinds of things. Gaming paper, how does it stand up to a weed whacker, a Sawzall, to really serious ones of how it takes a pen. We had someone ask if would it burn if you dropped a cigarette on it. So as a non-smoker, I attempted that. It was painful and a lot of coughing.
I'm sure.
But yeah,
that's just how much you care.
That's right. That's right. I want to test it for everything.
Excellent. Excellent. And is the show going well for you guys? You got the Annie nomination? I mean,
it's been phenomenal.
Looking great.
Yeah, we're nominated both for best miniature product and best
accessory. Yeah. And like I said, on our I believe on our Annie special, you are our favorite. So we'll pull for you guys.
I'll hug you the minute the interview's over.
All righty. Well, thank you very much for your time. That means I need to lengthen this interview as much as possible. No. Thanks for your time. I hope the con goes well for you guys.
Thank you.
Oh,
Hi, this is Celine with the Gamers Haven, and I'm with
Henry Lopez from Paradigm Concepts.
All right, so I see here the main display that we're seeing here is for Witch Hunters. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Okay. Well, Witch Hunter is what I like to call an alternate history, colonial horror, swashbuckling game. And the reason why is because, let's start from the beginning. First of all, Witch Hunter is a cinematic game. It's not a tactical game per se. Although you could play it on a grid and use miniatures and whatnot, it was really designed to be more free-flowing. We wanted to heighten the sense of high adventure, high action. It uses a very simple system. It's a D10 dice pool, so if you played White Wolf games or whatnot, you're very familiar with it already. We've added modular extra systems to it. For example, there's a morality system where everybody, you are humans, so everybody has their good side or their bad side, and that is simulated by your sins and your virtues.
Okay.
You have a sin and you have a virtue, and if you want to tap into your virtue, it gives you a little bit of a bump.
Okay.
But if you tap into your, what we call the dark side, it gives you a bigger bump, you know, more bang for your money, but you get a damnation point.
Okay.
Eventually, you have too many damnation points, you're out of the game.
Okay.
That's another way you're out of the game. Obviously, you can also die, but it's very difficult to die because you do have fate points that allow you to be injured and, you know, on the brink of death, but not quite dead. Because there's no fun in just dying after you develop the character for so long.
Yeah.
Now, Witch Hunter itself is predicated on the fact that Solomon, King Solomon from biblical times, looked out upon the world in despair. Humanity was supposed to be masters of the earth, but it had only a tenuous grasp because of all the creatures of the Nephilim, the Titans, and whatnot.
Right.
So he enacted what was called the Seal of Solomon, which is this huge ritual that separated the real world from the invisible world.
Okay.
And the invisible world is where he took all the supernatural creatures and tucked it away. Unfortunately, the adversary, the devil, or whatever you want to call him, corrupted the seal. So there's cracks in the seal, and these things flow through. Well, you're part of certain orders. We have 13 main orders, 9 in the main book, and then we have 4 more in the compendium that are there that throughout the ages have been fighting whatever comes through, protecting humanity.
They don't make divine seals like they used to.
No, they don't. It's only going to last a few thousand years, which is something I'll tell you about at the end. But the reason it's alternate history is because we have a disproportionate number of female players.
Okay.
And unfortunately, in 1689, which is where the game is set, females didn't get a very good end of the stick, if you know, you're treated like property and whatnot. So we decided to have the Rosie the Riveter effect take place earlier.
Okay.
Now, the Rosie the Riveter effect, for those of your listeners who don't know, is during World War II, so many women went off to fight the Germans and the Japanese that women had to step up and do the work of men. And that's where the equality started to really come into effect. What we did here was we had the Black Plague kill more men than women.
Okay.
So since there weren't as many men, the women had to step into the blacksmith or be the whatever.
Yeah.
And so we have that sort of equality, so you're not treated like property. And you know, obviously females can play and they love the game. What else can I tell you about the game? Also my favorite bad guys, the Aztecs. By 1689 in our world were wiped out. Since sorcery exists, they still exist in the Witch Hunter world because they were able to use that blood magic to stave off the smallpox and everything else.
Okay.
So the Aztecs are a major power in the world. As a matter of fact, next year we're coming out with the Aztec source book.
Yeah.
That flushes the whole Aztec Empire out and whatnot. Here, let me help you.
Are you able to play this game fine with just the Invisible World book?
The core
or do you
book?
Need
no,
the...
you don't need anything else. It's a self-contained book and it has monsters in there. One thing that's different about our monsters, and the reason why we did a monster book, which is called The Grand Tale of Adversaries, is because in the supernatural world, we're so, educated now because of media and whatnot. Everybody knows how to kill a werewolf. Everybody knows how to kill a vampire. Well, it's no fun. So what we do was we use what I call the Chinese restaurant menu to monster creature.
Okay.
There's a baseline of what makes a vampire, what makes a werewolf, what makes a ghost, what makes whatever. There's a baseline of that. But then when the GM creates his monster, he chooses. And for every boon he takes, he must pay a price.
Okay.
So let's say as a vampire, you are ageless, you must drink blood. That's the baseline.
Okay.
But now I want your guy to, you want your vampire to be able to shapeshift bats and wolves or whatever. Okay, so that's your boon, and that has to be a price. So maybe your price is, I don't know, you can't cross running water, you're affected by anything.
Yeah.
You know? I ran the first playtest of Witch Hunter, was a werewolf game,
okay.
where they tried, they were all cocky, so they made their silver bolts and whatnot, had no effect on the thing. I killed one of them just to prove a point, and let the rest go free, and then they had to figure out what was the weakness. And the weakness was they had to set him on fire and bless the fire. That's the only way to kill the werewolf.
Interesting.
So this particular werewolf. And that's how the game goes.
Okay.
So we created the Grand Theft Adversaries, which does a lot of the work for you. As far as the entire line is concerned, we do have a core book, we have the monster book, we have two, what I consider player compendiums. One is called The Bliss of the Damned, which is more of what's in the core book. For example, the core book has three traditions of magic.
Okay.
Hermetic, animism, and prayer.
Okay.
In The Bliss of the Damned, we add alchemy, Kabbalah, and voodoo.
Okay.
Okay. We also add four new orders there. Then, of course, we have the brand new book that came out this year at this convention called The Orders of Solomon. And The Orders of Solomon basically fleshes out and gives some crunch as well, but it's a lot of fluff onto the different orders you belong to.
Okay.
And it takes care of all 13 of the orders. Then, of course, we have some adventures. And the one thing that I did want to let your listeners know is that Paradigm loves to give away stuff. We're stupid that way. So what we did was we created a living campaign.
Okay.
For Witch Hunter, as well as the next one I'm going to tell you about, which is Shattered Empires, where you can play in the living campaign, and it's kind of like a progression where you can go to different conventions and play.
Okay.
But let's say you don't want to. We have 14 to 15 brand new adventures you can just download for free.
Okay.
Doesn't cost you a penny.
Yeah.
You can download them, and they're full-fledged adventures. That's Witch Hunter.
Okay.
Now, Shattered Empires, the quick launch here, is brand new for this convention as well. It is the inheritor of our original flagship product, which is called Arcanus, the World of the Shattered Empires.
Okay.
Way back when we started in 2001, I guess, we were in the D20.
Okay.
We were in the first wave of the D20 thing.
All right.
And we created Arcanus. We also had the living Arcanus.
Okay.
Where at the end of the 6-year story arc that we had, we gave away 125 adventures for free as part of the 6-year story arc. Obviously, that was based on the D20 system. When D20 went away, before the ship came up, it wasn't a good fix for us, or a fit for us, so we decided to just do our own thing.
All right.
Shattered Empires is much more tactical than Witch Hunter.
Okay.
Witch Hunter cinematic, this is more tactical. You should play with a mat and whatnot.
Okay. More tactical.
More tactical. You should use a grid and whatnot. One of the things that we disliked about 3rd edition is the fact that we've noticed that it takes too long sometimes for players to do their thing.
Yeah.
So by the time you're done doing all your actions and whatnot, I'm reading a book, you're watching TV, and MTV's on. All right. So what we did was one of our mottos in designing was get your head out of the book and back into the game. So we designed the clock. And the clock is more like an impulse system. You don't need these. These are little, for your player, for your listeners, they're these little doohickeys where it's like a clock. It's a circular system. They look like the old Magic Life counters, except that it goes from 1 to 12 on one side and 1 to 12 on the other side, doing the 24-hour thing. Everything here, when you do combat, you only roll initiative once.
Okay.
That sets you on the clock. Let's say you roll a 2.
Okay.
Right, you swing your gladius. Your gladius has a speed of 3. So you swing on 2, you go again on 5.
Okay.
And then, meanwhile, you go on 4, and you do your thing, and then it keeps going on and on and on. It's pretty fast. The nice thing about it is you're not constantly rolling for initiative, who goes first, or whatever. Once you start, it just flows until it's over.
Okay.
Magic works exactly the same way. We try to make sure that there's as little to no exceptions to the main systems, to the main rules. So once you know the main rule, you know the game.
Okay.
So magic has speed as well. Now the difference is, though, we had to add a regulator to magic.
Okay.
Because we didn't like the idea of I only know how to cast a spell 3 times and I'm done. For the whole day I'm useless.
Yeah.
So what we did was you can cast spells as many times as you want, but you have strain.
Mm.
And strain brain is the regulator.
Okay.
So what happens is, let's say you, like your example, you went on two.
Okay.
You want to cast a spell that has a speed of three and a strain of two.
Okay.
Okay? So you cast on two, your speed is three, that's five. You'll go again on five. But now you have a strain of two, which means you couldn't cast a spell again until seven.
Okay.
But you can move, you can stab, you can do anything else.
Okay.
However, let's say your back's against the wall. You have to cast a spell or else you're dead.
Yeah.
You take the strain.
Okay.
And the strain is damage. It's almost like similarly, I've seen those movies where the guy's on his last legs, blood is pouring from his nose, and
yeah.
he casts that one last spell to save his butt. That's what that is.
Okay.
And you just take the damage.
So it's a little cinematic, too, in its own.
Yeah. Well, I'm a big hand when it comes to that sort of thing. I like heroes to be heroes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's what Arcanus is. Arcanus is a world of heroes. As a matter of fact, we don't call them PCs. We call them heroes.
Okay.
And you're there, and you're there to tell a story. Now, like Witch Hunter, it does have a living campaign component to it. And one thing that I do want to stress is that I've noticed a lot of the other living campaigns don't do anymore. They don't do meta plots.
Okay.
We have overarching plots. Now, Arcanus had, we were a little ambitious, over-ambitious when we first started. We had a six-year story arc.
Okay.
And it was too much. And it's because by year four, new players came in and they were kind of lost or whatever. So now we're sticking to a two-year story arc, or one two-year story arc at the most. Which I think is much better.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing that I think is kind of cool, though, is we allow the players to affect the world.
Okay.
At the end of every adventure, you have a critical event sheet.
Okay.
You fill it out, and then after the first 3 months of the adventure's out, we collate them, and at the end of 3 months, we close it. You can still play the adventure, but
yeah.
And whatever happens, happens. That's, if the players say X lives, then in canon, X lives. And it keeps going on that way. So you do get to affect the world. And the players, ask any Arcaniac, as we call them, they have affected the world constantly. Every LARP we have, they screw me up. They do something. So I have to retread and whatnot. And we love that, because we think that it's our obligation to make the campaign, the living campaign, as much as a home game as possible. And we want that back and forth. So, and that's basically where we're at. We have lots more Arcane stuff coming out next year. We have the actual big book. What we have right now is a quick launch, which is only the tier one.
Okay.
Which is good for about 2 years worth of play.
Okay.
Next year we go through the whole five tiers. It'll be a huge book. We're probably going to be about 488 pages, full color, hardback. That'll be on next year.
Yeah.
Monster book will probably be on next year. I'm doing a campaign guide.
Okay.
That'll be on December. And I'm going to try my hand at a little dungeon crawl.
Okay.
Called the Temple of the Crimson Shadows. Which is part of the crusade that we're on right now.
Okay.
The latest story of Brandon's crusade, we're trying to meld all that in. As far as Witch Hunter is concerned, next year we have the Aztec book. We have another book, which is kind of like a crunch book for magic.
Okay.
And then the big one is this. In 2012, remember I told you that Solomon created the seal?
Yeah.
Well, in the main book, you'll read that he says, the seal is only going to last a few thousand years at the most.
Okay.
It's enough to give humanity a breathing room.
Yeah.
Well, in 2012, the seal cracks. So we have Witch Hunter 2012,
okay.
Which is not going to be an entire line. It's going to be a one-shot book. But it's Witch Hunter in the modern world, guns and...
With everybody
like
seeing them, not just...
Yeah, exactly. But it's out. The secret's out, and bam. It's almost like a post-apocalyptic type thing. So we'll see how that works. We're in development right now for it in 2012. So look for that.
Well, right. Thanks for your time, Mr.
No, thank you. Appreciate it.
Yes, I have to get that in there. This is Ethan, and I'm here with, what is your name, sir?
Evan.
Evan with Fantasy Flight Games, one of our personal favorite board game companies in the universe. And I'm not just saying that because I'm sitting here talking to you.
Yes.
But it seems you guys are looking at doing a Civilization board game that kicks so much ass you have no idea. And it looks like this one can fit on an actual table.
Yeah.
Well, tell me about it. What do we got here?
All right, so you got your civilizations that you are trying to build up and make better so that you mm-hmm. can win in four different ways. You
right.
have a tech victory, a culture victory, you also have the military victory,
mm-hmm.
and you have an economic victory. So in the game, there are a bunch of different icons that represent either of these things, be it your trade, the production, and there are culture icons. The map board, of course, is not revealed until you start exploring.
So it's the fog of war type of thing, like in the game.
is.
Yep.
Are the types of victories linked to a specific civilization, or anyone
can win? Anyone can win.
Yeah.
So then the game has four different steps and phases to go through. You have your start turn where you can build a new city, or there is also where you would change governments if you recently researched a new government. Otherwise, you go into anarchy and then...
Right, right.
The next one is trade. Trade is where all your wheeling and dealing happens.
Mm-hmm.
Based on where your cities, you count up all the trade around your cities, and then you decide if you want to do any trading with the other civilizations that are out there. The next is the city management, but I will come back to that because
sure.
That's where all the meat of the game is.
Mm-hmm.
But after everyone's done their city management is the movement. Movement is where you go out and start exploring. It'll cost one to reveal a map, and then you orient it so that the triangle is facing the way that you entered into the map.
Right.
Then there are huts that will be placed on the map. There are friendly huts, and then there are barbarian huts.
Right.
Only your armies can enter the huts. Your scouts, they are what go out to build your cities. But what scouts can do is if they're on a tile that is not within your city limits, they can ship those resources back to a city for the city to use.
Okay.
The last step is research. That's where, if your dial is at a spot where you can research the new tech. So there's your level one, level two,
level three, et cetera.
Et cetera. And then,
this just keeps going around, basically?
Yep.
Okay.
And you are building a tech tree. So if you have two level ones, you can then do a level two to go
nice.
Up, and you just build a pyramid going up until you get to your final. You get two level fours down, and then you research space flight, and you win the game.
Awesome.
So there's only the one level five?
Yes, okay. There's the only one level five because only one person can research space flight.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, because in the computer game, the first person who gets it wins the game.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, very nice.
And
very nice.
Go back to the meat of the phase of the city management.
Uh-huh.
That's where each city that you have out there gets to do an action of whether it be building a unit, a new army figure, a building, or devoting to the arts, or harvesting any resources that are within your city limits, or mm-hmm. that your scout may be standing on.
Nice.
Those are the different phases, and you just kind of keep going through there.
Cool. What's the ETA on this? Is it obviously it's still under, still yeah. being produced?
It's going to be winter of 2010.
Right. Rock on. Okay.
So around Christmas.
So around Christmas time. Excellent. Thank you very much for your time,
you are
sir.
Welcome.
I will be up about a few after four cons.
Hey, this is Celine over at the Gamers Haven, and we're with two gentlemen who will be introducing themselves because it's easier that way.
Hello, I'm Dan Hodap with Tribeca Flashpoint Academy in Chicago.
My name is Bob Wermling, also with Tribeca Flashpoint in Chicago.
If you hear that noise in the background, there's people doing like dogfights with paper airplanes.
And that's actually a game. We are a two-year digital arts college in Chicago, as I said. We have game development, animation, visual effects, film, and recording.
Okay.
All two-year programs.
So it's helping you in all the aspects of the game programming and creation.
Yes. From concept to...
Actualization.
Yes.
All the games we're showcasing here are all student-created games. You know, we're running games on all platforms. We're building them, getting them out there. So
okay.
It's a great program.
Anything else to add to the moment?
No, just tell your listeners, I guess.
Yes.
To look up Tribeca Flashpoint Academy on the internet.
Yeah, and... if you're ever in Chicago, come check us out. We're right downtown in the Loop. Tribeca Flashpoint, come check us out for a tour.
Sweet. All right. Well, thank you very much for your time.
I'm going to put Lang
This is Ethan with the Gamers Haven podcast. I'm here with Mr. Jim Kitchen of Mantic Games. What does Mantic do?
Mantic makes reasonably priced miniatures and a great game to go with it.
Alrighty. Well, tell us about what you got here.
We have, and I think it's important, Ethan, to remember something. A year ago, Mantic came to Gen Con with just a couple of samples of elves that we were going to do.
Uh-huh.
That was the only thing that we had at Gen Con.
Right.
In a calendar year, we've launched the entire elf range.
Mm-hmm.
We've launched most of the undead range. The only thing that's left that's coming is the zombies, and they should be out in just a few weeks after Gen Con.
Zombies are always good.
We've launched the dwarves. And next up, for all your listeners, are orcs.
Orcs? Nice. We'll get some pictures here, obviously.
So how much do the boxes go for? What's the price point?
Oh, the price point's really easy. You can get 10 great plastic miniatures for $15. You can get 20 for $25. And the savings just go up the larger the sets. The war hosts are just an incredible deal. The idea is that if you're sitting at home and you've always wanted to build a great-looking miniature army, you shouldn't have to get a home equity line. You shouldn't go bankrupt building a fantastic-looking army.
Yeah, and we at the Gamers Haven, we've done Warhammer quite a bit, and you know,
We all have. I mean, I used to work for Games Workshop.
I shudder to think how much I've dropped on a Vampire Counts and Chaos Army. So,
well, exactly, you know. And I think the thing is, if you look in the industry, there's a lot of companies that skew towards skirmish games,
mm-hmm.
where you might have 10 or 20 models,
yeah.
and that's great. You know, we all played Necromunda, we all played Mordheim. Mm-hmm. You know, there's all the great games from Privateer and all the other companies. But one of the sexiest things about our hobby is sitting there and looking at a table with 200 or 300 or 400 miniatures in an army.
Right.
And that is a spectacle that is unmatched in our industry. There really is. I mean, if you want to play role-playing games, that's great. You'll sit around, you'll talk with your friends, you might have a few miniatures on the table. But you know, role playing is you have a conversation, you might have a few miniatures. Card games for the most part don't ever use miniatures. But our hobby, which is miniature gaming, it has a lot of appeal. You can collect miniatures,
mm-hmm.
you can paint miniatures,
mm-hmm.
and you can play games with them. And really all of that involves some aspect of, bluntly, hoarding miniatures.
Yes.
And we all do. I mean, I'd be afraid to look under my basement stairs at this point. But that's the idea behind the line, is that you can now afford to build that army you've always thought about,
mm-hmm.
and not sacrifice quality. Our sculpts are fantastic. We're the only manufacturer, you can't see this at home, but we're the only manufacturer bold enough to put a drunken dwarf casualty model on the sprue.
Okay, we're gonna try to get a picture of that.
That's right.
That's the drunken dwarf. All right, come on, focus. There we go. Maybe, possibly.
But we love this stuff. Everybody at Mantic has played miniature games for 15, 20, 30 years. This is the stuff that we live and breathe, and we bring that passion to the line. And I hope it comes across. I really do. I think in a year, you would be hard-pressed to find any other company at Gen Con that has mm-hmm. managed to bring out as many miniatures in plastic as we have
sure.
in less than a year.
Sure. And where do you guys have your stuff made? Is it made?
It's made in Nottingham, England.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay.
So, Mantic's based out of England. And
okay, that was my next question.
It's like one of the half a dozen other companies that,
sure.
that have all spawned from people who used to work for Games Workshop.
Okay. Well, I'm looking at one of your cards here. What are these Mantic points that you have?
Well, if you're at home and you're buying our miniatures, every box set, everything that comes from Mantic
mm-hmm.
has Mantic points that you can save,
sure.
and then you can submit them and get free miniatures.
Sweet. We like free miniatures. Free miniatures are always good.
Now,
once you pause.
And real quick.
Sure.
The paint set is important because
mm-hmm.
there is no other paint set in the market right now at our price point that includes miniatures
yeah.
and a brush.
Yeah, and how much does one of the paint sets generally run?
$35 retail, MSRP for the
mm-hmm.
U.S. You get a great selection of paints.
Right,
you get
it looks
a
like
quality brush, not something that's horrible and made out of nylon.
It's like, what about nine paints?
9 paints, a brush, and you get 10 of our miniatures.
Nine paints, a brush, 10 minis for $35. Wow.
And that's big paint pots. So
yeah.
It's another third on the GW size paints. They're 12.
Very nice.
And they're quality paints. They're not.
Yeah. They're not the Walmart paint.
Right. They're not, yeah, they're not hideous.
Hi there.
Alrighty. Well, alright, now I'm here with, get your name here, Ronnie Renton, also from Mantic.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk a bit about the Morgoth's Revenge, the battle sets.
Yep. Comes out in October. We've been releasing models, as Jim's been telling you, for the last year.
Mm-hmm.
And we're now at the exciting point where we can put a rule set out that will go along with all the ranges and allow you to play. Starts with one unit on each side, it can build up.
Sure.
You're going to be talking about $50 for 100 miniatures, with two war machines, mm-hmm. the rules will be included in there, everything, bases, guides, everything you need to get going. So a really terrific value set for people to start playing fantasy battles, or just a great way to start building your armies.
Okay, well, what comes in the what comes in the battle set then? It's just
specifically, you're going to get a dwarf army.
Right.
By that, you're going to get 25 dwarf heavily armored hand weapons, shield options. You're going to get another 20 with missile weapons.
Uh-huh.
You're going to get an organ gun cannon.
Sure.
You're going to get an undead arm.
Fun.
Yeah, undead army, which is going to include a whole heaps and heaps. I forget how many skeletons. Some more armored skeletons, the revenants, the armored skeletons. You're going to get ghouls. You're going to get zombies. And you're going to get a Balefire catapult. And rules to play them all.
Excellent.
So everything you need, take it out, a couple of dice. You can literally pop it open. The rules being written by Alessio Calvatori, mm-hmm. who's written Warhammer, who's written 40K. He's, as far as I'm concerned, the best miniatures rules writer on the market, most experienced. He's writing the rules. And away it comes. The first 1,000 are going to have a free magazine in there as well, the Mantic Journal.
Excellent, excellent.
So,
and you can pre-order these on the website currently?
Got them on our website. They're on some of the other main websites too. And, of course, order via your local hobby store, and then they'll get it in for you.
Excellent, sounds great. Looks like you guys are doing some great stuff. I got to see what's in the 50 on that set.
50 at a war machine.
Oh.
You get 20 skeletons, 20 armored skeletons,
mm-hmm.
you get 10 ghouls, and a war machine. So, and this, $60.
That's amazing. How is it you guys keep the prices down?
Well, we're doing two things. We're going to try and get some volumes.
Sure.
You know, it's all about people getting excited about it. And it is
well,
all screwed.
I can tell as a Warhammer player, this stuff is as good or better than what Warhammer looks like. I mean, you guys are great plastics.
We have the stores to pay for.
Yeah.
We intend to work with hobby stores. We intend to work with online retail.
You intend to come to Gen Con.
Come to Gen Con.
There you go.
Be part of the community. And that's what we're trying to do, really. And I think we do see ourselves absolutely as wanting to be one of the big three over the next 5 years. I think that comes down to value for money. I think we're doing that.
Oh, yeah,
I think there's got to be no compromise on quality. Mm-hmm. No one's cheap miniatures, good miniatures, at a good price.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what we're starting to do. I don't think there's a better Ghoul Mark product on the market.
Yeah, and I love the, they come with a circular base, but they have the slotted.
So if you do play Warhammer, they're absolutely compatible.
Well, and part of the annoying thing with Warhammer is slotting them and putting them in the base and all that stuff. This is great.
It's also a weak joint, because all you've got is that tiny little bit on the bottom of the feet.
Uh-huh.
Whereas this way, you've got a nice strong join, also to help with ranking up.
Yes,
because they're quite dynamic.
God,
you need to just have some wiggle room.
Like I said, undead army, I know how fun that is to rank up skeletons.
And
to put them together, too.
Nine piece skeleton.
Yeah.
Right, I'm building an army, I just want to go 1, 2, 3. Clip them off, push them in, you've built three figures.
I know.
But then, okay, I want to make some spearmen, fine. Weapons choices. And with a couple
awesome.
Of units, you can do...
There's some great customization.
But then I want to do some modelling. I want to take my leader and make him a little bit more mm-hmm. unique. Well, there's heads.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got the head with the axe buried in it. You know, somewhere.
Very nice.
Yeah. So you've got... It's a journey from rank and file basic. If you want to get these done, you can get them done in 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Glued together. If you want to take 3 hours,
you can too, yeah. Very nice, very nice. Well, thank you very much for the time and for showing me this stuff. It's awesome.
This is Celine with the Gamers Haven, and I'm here with
Mike David from Fantasy Flight Games.
Okay, we're looking at Call of Cthulhu, the card game.
Okay, so basically Call of Cthulhu, the card game, takes place in the mythos world of H.P. Lovecraft, and it is a living card game, so we're constantly coming out with new cards for it to expand it and you know, add more cool stuff to it. The core set, which we're demoing here, comes with enough cards to build decks from seven different factions from the Cthulhu mythos. Three of those factions are human factions. They're the Agency, Miskatonic University, and the Syndicate. And they represent various aspects of the humans in the world of H.P. Lovecraft. There are four mythos factions that are tied directly to ancient ones in the mythos universe. One faction is Cthulhu, we have Haster, we have Yog-Sothoth, and Shub-Niggurath. So what you can do with the core set is you can combine, because these aren't really full decks, you can combine any two of these to make a full deck.
Okay.
You can even mix mythos with human factions. There are some limitations on that, but for the most part, they work together. For the purpose of the demo, though, to make it simple, we're going to just stick with either one person being the human faction or one person being the mythos faction.
Okay.
There's basically three different card types. We have character cards, which have these icons on the side that are directly referencing these struggles that you go through on these story cards. Now, these story cards that are in the center are the goal of the game. To win the game, you need to win three of these story cards.
Okay.
So whoever gets three of these story cards wins.
So when you get one, a new one's drawn out?
Yes, exactly. We have a draw pile here for more story cards, and they come into play as these stories are won.
Okay.
So the character cards are kind of like your main purpose for winning these story cards. But there are also event cards, which have like a one-time effect. You play the card, the effect resolves, and then the event card goes to your discard pile. And then the other type of card is a support card. Now, support cards, and by the way, these card types are all written on the side here, so it's pretty easy to find out which is which. The support cards, they can be locations that will go into play, and they'll stay in play off to the side, and they'll have like an effect on the game from then on, and it's an effect that you might be able to use at your discretion, or it might be an effect that's always in play and always affecting everything. Support cards can also be attachments. They can attach to other characters to make them better. They can attach to locations. They can even attach to story cards sometimes and change those. So those are the three basic card types. All cards have a cost up here in the upper left corner. That is the cost that you need to pay for them. The way you pay for cards is while you're playing, and we'll just use some cards that aren't in our deck here as placeholders for our three domains.
Okay.
And the way you pay for cards is you drain domains, and that's indicated by putting a statue on them.
Okay.
You drain them for the resources that are in them. The way that you attach resources is during the game, once per turn, you'll have the option of giving up a card in your hand to attach to a domain as a resource. And you would just slide that under here, and the symbol at the bottom would be left up so you can see what the resource is.
So different cards have different types of resources.
Exactly. Every card has a different symbol type on it. So as you go through the game, you might attach different resources. If you're playing a multi-faction deck, you might be attaching different resources here. So eventually, if you build up a domain that's like this, when you go to drain this, this would provide 1, 2, 3 resources.
Okay.
But
so without any attachment, they don't give any resources at all?
Correct.
Okay.
So if you wanted to play this card, for instance, you would need 3 resources to play that. So this domain would satisfy the 3 resources. But there's another important factor when you're paying resources for a card. You have to match, you have to do a resource match, and one of your resources in the domain that you're draining has to match the color of the card that you're playing. So as long as one of them matches, you're okay. So that's a resource match. So that's pretty much how you pay for cards. Now, the meat of the game is going after these stories. So as you're playing, you might get some characters out there, and they would just be in your play area. And at the end of your turn, the last phase of your turn is the story phase. That is where you have the option to commit characters to stories. And you would have to assess all that all at once. You would have to make all your decisions on who you're committing and what story you're committing there to all at once. So you would do that by exhausting the character, which is you would turn them sideways, and then you would pick what story you were going to commit them to. So you could have like a couple of guys committed to this story, and then you could have a guy committed to this story.
Okay.
Once you made all of your commitments and you're done, it is then your opponent's turn to commit some of their characters in opposition to the characters that you committed. So like, let's pretend that you were here and you had a couple characters already out.
Ooh, I get Yogg's on me.
Yeah. So you've got a couple characters and your characters are still ready. If your characters are exhausted, you can't use them in defense because they're still exhausted. But let's say your characters are still ready. You could then commit your characters to try to stop me.
Okay.
So you could go, okay, I'm going to oppose you here with this guy, and I'm going to oppose you here with this guy, but you're going to just leave this be because you just don't think it's as important. So once these commit, after everything is committed, then we start resolving stories. Now, the main thing that you want to do is you want your skill numbers to be more than your opponent's.
Okay.
If you are the active player, the player whose turn it is, that is your objective for committing your characters to the stories, is to try and get success for having the highest skill.
Okay.
But before you can determine the success, you have to resolve these struggles first.
Okay.
So the first struggle on the card, and they resolve in this order.
Okay.
So the first struggle on the card is the terror struggle. And the way you assess who wins a struggle is you add all the icons up amongst the characters that are participating in that story, and whoever has the most would win the struggle. So let's pretend like you had this guy too.
Okay.
Okay.
So then I have one terror and you have none.
Right.
Okay.
So you'd pretty much add it up that way. You'd be like, oh, I have one terror, you have none. So I lost the terror struggle. Now, each one of these struggles has a different effect to the characters that are involved in that story.
Okay.
So the effect of the terror struggle is that the loser has to pick one of his guys to go insane.
Oh, okay.
So I lost the terror struggle. I have to choose which one of these guys I want to go insane. So I'll choose this guy. And when a character goes insane, they are flipped face down, so they're kind of out of commission for a while. And they run away from the story because they're shrieking in terror, and they're no longer committed to the story.
Okay.
So they're kind of out of it.
All right.
The next struggle is the combat struggle. And that's done the same way. We add up how many skulls we have. And whoever loses the combat struggle, they have to choose a character to take a wound.
Okay.
And you would indicate that with little wound tokens here.
Okay.
Now, most characters, they take one wound and that's enough to kill them.
Okay.
And when they get killed, they're out of the game permanently. They go to the discard pile. Insane characters are still in the game.
They're just insane.
They're just insane. But dead characters are obviously out forever, and they go to the discard pile. There are some characters that might have the keyword toughness on them. Characters with toughness can take more than one wound before they die. And the number next to the toughness keyword is how many additional wounds it takes to kill them.
So he has +3, so he'd be able to take 4 wounds.
Right. And you would just pile up the wounds on him over time. They do not restore on your next turn. They stay on the character permanently. So.
Cthulhu.
Yeah, exactly. So eventually they will die. But anyway, so let's pretend that I had these guys over here. And this guy was the guy that died. So I still got a character here. The next struggle is the arcane struggle. And
and obviously that's to know with the book, and whoever has the most books wins. The winner of the Arcane Struggle gets the bonus of choosing one of their characters committed to the story to ready.
Okay.
So you get like a bonus chance to ready that character. That's useful because if perchance you were the active player, you would have an extra guy out here so that when it becomes my turn, you would have someone that was ready to defend. So, plus, there's also the idea that some characters have to exhaust to activate their special abilities.
Okay.
So, readying them is also a bonus because, oh, you get to use their special ability again. So, readying a character has a lot of benefits in that regard. So that's what you get for doing that. So, like, we can pretend like you chose to ready this guy. So now this guy's ready. He's still committed to the story, though. So he's not out of it. But he now is ready, and you can use him again on subsequent turn. The last struggle is the investigation struggle.
Neither of us has that symbol.
Right. Neither of us has that, but let's just pretend that this guy has a magnifying glass on him, and I won the investigation struggle. The bonus for that is you get to put a success token on your side of the story.
Okay.
Now, to win a story, you have to place 5 success tokens on it.
So you need to survive the other challenges in order to win the investigation.
Exactly.
Okay.
Because the goal is, eventually, once you've gone through all these struggles, all these icon struggles, the final assessment is who has the most skill.
Okay.
Now, I'm the active player, so if I have the most skill, I'll get a success token. If you have the most skill because you're opposing me, you will just prevent me from getting this.
Okay?
The only way that you could ever get a skill as a defender is if you won the investigation challenge.
Okay.
But during a skill check, a skill challenge.
So what's the X? None, or is the X?
X would be a value that's usually determined by the card text here. So in this case, X is at all times equal to the number of Yogg characters in play. So right now, X would be 3.
Okay.
So let's say 3. You're 6, 7, 8. So let's just say for the sake of the demo here, let's say that I had killed this guy off somehow.
So there's 5.
Yeah. So 5 to 6, I get the success.
So you're now 2/3 of the way there.
Yes. And let's say, for instance, for some sake of, you know, fate or whatever, I had managed to get rid of all your guys.
Okay.
If at any time when you're assessing the skill number, if the opposition is 0, that story is considered unchallenged.
Okay.
And you get a bonus success token for unchallenged.
So that would have been like over here where there was
when we had set that up, that would have been. So that's one of those things that you have to be wary of letting your opponent just waltz right in and get a story unchallenged.
So what happens if no one has a terror token or no one has a combat? Is it just a draw?
Nothing happens.
Okay.
And if it's ever a tie, nothing happens.
Okay.
But there are characters that can break ties. There are characters that have the fast keyword.
Okay.
Fast characters will break ties.
They like strike first.
Yeah.
Okay.
And whoever has the most fast characters, like if I had one and you had one, it would still be a tie.
Okay.
You have to have the most fast characters.
Does the fast character need to have the skill involved? Is it just like...
No. If he's participating in the challenge, he will break all ties.
Okay. So he like points out to other people how to
break. So that is the meat of the game, and that's pretty much it. The only other thing is that when someone does win a story, on the bottom of all these story cards is a text box with an effect. And the winner of the story would take the card, and at that time that he's winning the story, he would then have the option of triggering this or not triggering this. Sometimes they can be beneficial for you, sometimes they can be detrimental.
Depends on the time of the game.
Yeah, so you might not want to trigger them, so you might skip that. But regardless of what you decide to do, you do get to keep the story card, you put it in your successful story pile, and once you've gotten 3 here, you win the game.
Okay. So that is like a really interesting game. I've never played Cthulhu, but they go on about it, the hosts of the Gamers Haven.
Yeah.
So what do you get exactly in the starter pack?
The core set, it comes with these seven different faction decks.
Okay.
Like I said, they're not full decks, but you can combine any 2 of these to make a full deck. Plus, you also get additional neutral cards, which are basically, they're the same type of cards that that I showed you here, but they have no faction allegiance. So when you're paying for them with your domains, the color doesn't matter.
Okay.
Any resources will pay for these, and you don't have to worry about color matches with these. So they're more versatile in that way.
But you also can't use them as sources.
Right, you can use them as a resource, and they will provide one resource, but they will not satisfy the requirements.
You still need one of the color.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but you get 15 of these.
Okay.
And when you're building a deck, you can take two of any faction and then slip in like 7 of these.
Okay.
And you'll have a full deck to play with.
Okay.
So
you get the 7 factions.
Yep.
You get 6 of these little statues?
Yeah, you get the statues to indicate your drain domains.
Okay.
It also comes with the board. If you'd like, I could show it to you.
So is this always ever just a two-player game, or can there be multiple?
It is designed as a two-player game. We do have some multiplayer rules on the website, which were kind of developed after the fact.
Okay.
So, but it does play best with two players. So the core set comes with this board here, which is very useful because you would put your story cards here. It has a progress track here on each side for who's winning the story. It has a little pool here for all your tokens.
Well, it has 5 here.
Yeah, you need 5 successes to win the story.
Okay,
you win the game with 3 stories.
Oh, but 5 successes per story.
5 successes per story.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
And what's the price point for
it? It's $39.95.
Oh, that's cool.
And we come out with new cards every month in these Asylum packs that come out every month. And in each pack there's 20 cards.
Okay.
And it retails for $14.95, and you get 3 copies of every card in there. So 20 brand new cards, 3 copies of each because...
So it's 60 cards.
It's 60 cards. The 3 copies is very important because anytime you're building a deck, the maximum number of copies that you can have of any card is 3.
Okay.
So by providing you with 3 cards, we're giving you a full play set.
Okay.
You know, you'll have every card that you need to build any deck you want. So.
And are those randomized, or are they set for...
No, they're set. So that's the difference in the living card game, is that it's not collectible. Everybody can get every card that they could possibly need to build any deck that they want. So.
Good. That sounds very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Attention now.
Yes.
All right. Hello and welcome to the Red Phone Zone, where we don't know what we're talking
about. We do know what we're talking about. You know, we called the whole Hugo Weaving Red Skull thing, remember?
Oh, right. Fine. Where was it? The Red Phone Zone, where we talk about all kinds of gaggles of...
Aaron, could you cut it with the gaggles thing? It's not working for me.
All right. Fine. The Red Phone Zone, where we talk about movies, comics, video games.
Hey, don't forget that we talk about, you know, Bruce Campbell and Christopher Lee, obviously.
Natalie Portman.
All right, guys! I'm trying to do a commercial for the Red Phone Zone, where we talk about movies, comics, video games, tabletop gaming, all kinds of other geek stuff.
You mean that show we broadcast on Ustream?
Yes!
Wednesday, 8 Central Standard Time.
Right, at redphonezone.com. Now, can you guys just give me a minute to get this promo done?
Sure. Sorry, dude.
Yeah.
All right, from the top. Hello and welcome to the Red Phone Zone.
Aaron, we need a tiebreaker. Okay, who would win in a fight with Galactus?
Anti-Monitor.
Galactus and Anti-Monitor. Come on.
I think the more important question would be who would win in a fight between me and you two idiots.
I guess we don't know what we're talking about.
You've been listening to the Gamers Haven Podcast. Subscribe to the show by visiting our website at gamershavenpodcast.com, where you can also discuss all things gaming in our forum, drop us an email, or just peruse our episode archives. You can also call us toll-free and leave a message to be played on the show by dialing 1-877-416-1270. That's toll-free, 877-416-1270. On our website, you'll also find our actual play podcasts chronicling our misadventures through all things role-playing. Enjoy what you hear? Why not support the Gamers Haven by purchasing Gamers Haven merchandise, visiting our affiliates, or just by clicking on our donate button? The Gamers Haven podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 United States license, some rights reserved. Some music in this podcast is used with permission of Joe Hero Band at joehero.com. This is a Thousand Monkeys production.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.